Sports Day for Kia. The all-new Kia Sportage has been unleashed. And Red Energy, awarded Canstar's most trusted retailer nationally for 2021.
7 minutes past six. Hello, welcome along to Sports Day, and it's a big show tonight. Despite all the pre-match jibber-jabber, the Poms have crashed, you guessed it, at the Gabba, all out for 147. And Monty Panesar is going to give us his thoughts coming up later in the program. And shortly, Scoop, a first on Melbourne Radio. Jeff Brown is going to break his silence and talk to us for the first time since he put his hand up. But we begin tonight where we need to begin, and that is the ongoing saga of Novak Djokovic, whose views on vaccination are well known, placing his position in the Australian Open in serious doubt. We have been talking about this on-again, off-again nonsense for a long, long time. But overnight, it was suggested by the Herald Sun that Djokovic will not only avoid 2 weeks quarantine in Sydney on arrival, but he'll walk straight into the Australian Open unvaxxed because of a medical exemption, making a total mockery, if true, of everything Dan Andrews and Craig Tiley have been saying for weeks. I still can't believe it to be true, but the conspiracy theorists have pushed back hard. A medical exemption at the final hour for the fittest man in the world would read as such a manipulation and exploitation of the system. It would embarrass all involved. Talk about the pub test. This is such an hypocrisy, if it eventuated, you wouldn't get in the door of any respectable hotel. Only this week, Craig Tiley, leader of the Australian Open, said, "There's one thing we know. If Djokovic is playing in January, then he is vaccinated." I take Tiley at his word. I know him well, and I can't believe he would indulge in such a public deception. And as such, I won't believe it to be true. And as for the Premier, well, perhaps he can't recall, but only a month ago he rebuked the Prime Minister, who was pushing for reasonable exemptions for events like the Australian Open to proceed. Andrews wouldn't have a bar of it, strongly stating his view that if it was good enough for working Victorians and spectators to be vaccinated, it was good enough for all tennis players. So, Scoop, it's impossible for me to believe that anyone would support a medical exemption for Novak Djokovic to play in this Australian Open. Welcome to you. What are your thoughts?
Hello, Jared. Strong stuff. My thoughts are it might be our biggest show of the year coming up because England have been bowled out for 147. We've got Jeff Brown doing the first interview, and we're starting with Novak Djokovic. I mean, that just goes to show how much is going on right now.
Certainly riled people around this town today. I mean, it has dominated talkback radio.
So I spent a lot of day on the phone today
and
being really palmed off from one place to the next.
Yep.
Started with Tennis Australia. They told me to speak to the state government. They said it's nothing to do with them, speak to the Federal Health Department. Federal Health said it's nothing to do with them, speak to Home Affairs. Home Affairs said it's not to do with us, you've got to speak to Border Protection. Eventually got some sort of an answer from Border Protection, who are going to come back to us more formally. But my understanding of the situation, having spent a lot of time on it today, is that Novak Djokovic could get a medical exemption from someone overseas, potentially even his hometown of Serbia. And then, as soon as that exemption is shown to an airline, as he gets on the plane, he is treated as essentially a vaccinated person, in that he won't have to quarantine. Now, the big question that wasn't answered by James Molino today, and that needs to be answered by Daniel Andrews, is will he be treated as vaccinated in the state of Victoria? And that is, can he work? And that is, can he play in the Australian Open? There's more to play out in this one.
Well, I think ultimately there's a bit to be discussed from Craig Tiley with the Joker, because if he turns up with a vaccine, with a medical exemption,
will that have to be approved by someone here?
Absolutely, that would need to be done. But even still, it would still not, in my view, pass the pub test.
No, it's going to anger a lot of people.
You asked me last night if I thought they'd be booing, and I said there's no way.
I see that off air, yeah.
But if he turned up with this, basically walking in the back door, it could set up a scene that I would be...
People would barrack against him.
I think it would be in his greatest, potentially his greatest moment of triumph.
Yeah.
It could be a scene where we would regret it being at the Australian Open. I mean, the anger is palpable. Only last Monday, our ombudsman outlined the plight of nearly 9,000 Victorians who applied for exemptions and were refused at the border. Now, there was a strict border for a reason, but it doesn't diminish the pain that these people went through. And so all of a sudden, if Novak Djokovic turned up with an exemption to work in the very same town where people weren't allowed to come and go to funerals for their parents or look after grandchildren when their daughters are suffering from cancer, it would be potentially an ugly outcome. And I think I can't believe what I heard James Molino saying today. they surely need to have a say on this because...
Well, they can have a say on it.
Of course they can.
Yeah. I mean, they've had a say, they've had a strong say as their own state with their own set of rules for the last 20 months. So why should it stop here? I mean, I'm with you. The federal authorities can grant him an exemption, but the state authorities can stop him from playing. That's the long and short of it. We've got to get to a break, Jared, because...
Who's coming up?
On the other side of it, a man that by tomorrow week we think will be the new president of the Collingwood Footy Club. He's yet to do a radio interview. His first will be next on
Go
Sports
Pies.
Day.
Welcome back to Sports Day. As we said at the top of the program, Jeff Brown, our special guest. Jeff Brown has been a highly influential member of the VFL-AFL scene for close to 40 years, significant in the transition of the VFL to the AFL, introducing new teams, rewriting rules and conditions, among many other contributions, advising clubs and individuals within the game for decades. He's always been considered a certainty to lead the commission, but he has instead turned his attention to his beloved club, the Pies, and is currently favourite to take over as president following the election on December the 16th. Tonight, Jeff Brown talks for the very first time. Welcome to you, Brownie. Great to have you on.
Thanks, Jared, and thanks, Sam. It's great to join you.
It's exciting times, no doubt, for you. You've always been a Collingwood supporter. You've always wanted to make a contribution, but up until this point in time, your contribution has been to the game itself. What made you, Jeff, turn your focus towards clubland?
Well, I've watched Collingwood, obviously, closely over the years, Jared, and I saw a vacuum emerge at the club after the events of earlier in the season. When Eddie left the club, left the presidency, and the what followed, I think, was disappointing to me to see, firstly, some indecision about the leadership and then eventually a choice, but no real strong leadership emerged to take the club forward, to hold the club and rebuild the club after a fairly tumultuous start. Mm. So I thought... I care deeply about Collingwood. You know, I love football. I have the time now to devote to a leadership role at the club, and that's what I've decided to do.
Tell me about Jeff Brown, the president. What sort of leadership style would you invoke?
Well, leadership involves gaining the confidence of firstly, the other board members. And leadership is about working as a team at board level. It's not about a president decreeing certain things from high. We need to work very closely with the administration and, of course, very closely with the football department and the players right across all the teams that are involved in Collingwood. You need to set an example. You need to be true to your word. You need to be firm in your decision-making. You need to think through the issues and make good decisions. And you need to restore confidence across all of those groups I mentioned in the club. And I think a lack of leadership breeds a lack of confidence. And I think that was apparent to me as a very significant problem for Collingwood this season.
Can we deal with the board specifically? Jody Sizer was reasonably insulting when you put your hand up. And for what it's worth, I thought unfairly so. How are you going to deal with her, and are you expecting her to stay on the board if you are elected as president?
Well, firstly, Jared, I wouldn't regard that as an insult. I've had far worse insults in my life, and I'm sure you have too. But I've spoken to Jody. Comments were made in the heat of a hurried attempt to put together an extraordinary general meeting, which would have sought to replace all seven positions on the board. That was quite confronting. When I discussed the matter with Jody, she and I quickly formed the view of each other that we had the best interests of Collingwood at heart. And what you may have noticed, Jared, is that the club, the board subsequently issued a statement by all the board members welcoming my nomination and that of Barry Karp and Renee Roberts, and of course, welcoming the re-election of Christine Holgate. So I think that's all just a bit of froth and bubble from part of a campaign that has ebbed and flowed a bit, and there's been some tense moments. But what we eventually came up with was a contest for four positions with three of the directors remaining, including Jody, Paul Lequeria, and Mark Corder. And that's a sensible evolution rather than a revolution. I think we're all much happier with that outcome.
If you're elected, do you think Mark Corder will stay on the board?
Well, Mark has said he would. I've spoken to Mark several times over, even over recent weeks. He's called me about matters to do with the club. He's a good professional, and I am. And there's no question that the financial situation at Collingwood is extremely sound. And if he wished to stay on for however long, then that would be a matter for him. He's not up for election. He's actually appointed until the end of 2022.
Yep.
So it will be entirely up to Mark. But I have no doubt that I can work very well with Mark.
Jeff, Gillon McLachlan, in my opinion, will be having his last year as AFL boss next year. Now, one of his great legacies, in my opinion, is equalisation, taking from the rich and giving to the poor. In a recent interview with Michael Warner in the Herald Sun, you talked about, you know, calling for a review of the footy department soft cap and potentially even a reversal of the distribution cuts. Do you stand by that? And how radical do you think a change like that could be?
Oh, well, I think there needs to be some degree of equalisation. I mean, the draft and the salary cap are a form of equalisation. Some clubs need more support from others, and it's up to the AFL to determine that. At Collingwood, what I want to see is that we be properly rewarded for our effort in building a great club. In relation to the soft cap, all clubs in the AFL and all directors personally sitting on boards of AFL clubs have a primary legal obligation to ensure that they provide a safe workplace for their players and employees. And I need to look harder at whether or not the restrictions imposed by the soft cap prevent the club from providing the very best environment for experienced players to be treated well for injuries and return to the playing field, and for young players to ensure that they get the very best possible pathway to success in their careers. So
yep.
Those things are fundamental, and I don't think anyone would disagree with the fact that we need to provide a safe workplace for our employees. It's a fundamental tenet of the law.
Jeff, there's also a perception in the footy industry, rightly or wrongly, that if you were to be elected president, that Eddie Maguire would still have an influence on things that happen at that footy club. Now, you've been very open about your relationship with Eddie, as Eddie has been about you. But would you seek any counsel from Eddie on football issues if you were running the club?
Look, Sam, Eddie and I are friends, and we always will be.
Yep.
I don't carry anyone's bags. Anyone that knows me knows that. This is a new and a fresh start for Collingwood. I'll be talking to people who I think can contribute from their knowledge or their expertise. And
well, Eddie would have to be one of those people, wouldn't he, Jeff?
Well, I think Eddie has a past relationship with sponsors, for instance, with government in relation to funding for works that are to be undertaken there at the Holton Centre. So if I needed to call on him to assist with some of those connections, I know I could and I know he would. But for anyone to say that that somehow compromises my leadership in the club or interferes with the mandate that a new board would have to run the Collingwood Football Club is just not right.
Well, talk to the people that are going to vote you in, Brownie, and how are you going to make Collingwood a better place for your average supporter that buys the membership?
Well, I've said what I've said about that, Jared. The practical reality is you need to really get in there and have a look around. One of the things I've committed to is a listening tour.
Yep.
To go through all aspects of the club. You know, I don't profess to have all the answers, but it goes back to the two fundamental principles that I mentioned at the start of this interview. One is leadership. If you can restore and have strong leadership of a club, I think confidence will return at all layers. And with added confidence, I think you will see improved performance. So we need to get leadership and confidence back into the club. Whatever else we need to do, I'll get around and I'll talk to people and I'll make sure that we quickly compile an agenda of the things that need to be done. We'll get into it and we'll do it.
Jordan Ngoi, have you got a viewpoint on where he stands at the present time?
Court case is tonight.
Given that the court case is tonight, I guess in some ways you're restricted. But let's say the court case finds him guilty of a minor charge. Where do you see Jordan Ngoi's future at the present time?
Well, you've set me up with a hypothetical, Jared, and you know my answer to that. And I haven't spoken to Jordan Ngoi. I haven't spoken to anyone who's got any detailed knowledge of the facts surrounding what occurred in New York. And it would be foolish and improper for me to express any view about that until I know all the facts. Everybody should be listened to, all of the facts turned over, and a sensible decision made in the best interest of the football club. Now, I don't have the knowledge to be able to determine that at this stage, but maybe I might get an opportunity. It depends on what happens in the election, and it depends what happens in the court case tonight. It's an ongoing saga, and it'll need to be dealt with if I'm fortunate enough to be elected and if it is still continuing after I am elected.
At the very least, though, Jeff, you must be disappointed that Jordan's put himself in another precarious position.
Well, I'm not disappointed. I'm not happy about it because I don't know what led to the situation that arose. Sam, you've been in situations before where you've been drawn into things that later on you perhaps wish you hadn't have been.
Yep, definitely.
I don't know the full facts. You keep asking me questions and try to draw me into a better answer on this, but I won't prejudge or the situation, or I won't prejudge the position of anyone who's alleged to be a victim of what happened.
Yep.
Can I ask you then about the AFL itself? I think you're on the record as saying you think it's time for another all-encompassing review. The last one was a couple of decades ago, done by Colin Carter. What elements of the game do you think need to be addressed?
I think the fact that we haven't had a review, a deep dive into the arrangement between clubs and the commission for over two decades really, really speaks for itself, Jared. But one of the things that's occurred, and as you know, I was about very early on when the AFL commission was formed. It was formed because there were parochial interests amongst all of the clubs, and they found it very difficult to make decisions for the good of the game, and chose to instead to concentrate on their own interests. But what's happened over those two decades, I think it's very obvious to me that the quality of directors around the board tables of AFL clubs has improved dramatically, and there are outstanding directors who are attracted to and now give freely of their time to serve their football clubs. Now, those people and the quality of those people, I think should be acknowledged. And I think AFL clubs, through those directors, should have some, perhaps greater say, in some of the strategic decisions that are made in relation to the game. And I think the commission, I have every great respect for the commission, and Gil's done a mighty job and his staff steering through the difficulties of the last 2 years. But I think there could be a lot of useful input to be garnered from the clubs. And I think that we should revisit the power sharing between the clubs and the commission and make full use of the greater expertise that exists at the coalface, which is where the clubs operate.
Jeff, we very much appreciate you coming on. December 16, which is tomorrow week, is the big day for the Collingwood Footy Club. It's the annual general meeting. Good luck.
Thanks, Sam, and thanks, Jared. And I look forward to chatting to you, either commiserating with you if I'm unsuccessful or celebrating with you and your listeners, and perhaps answering a little more about some of the things you've asked me if I'm fortunate enough to be elected.
We'll certainly hold you to that. And certainly one final question. When will the Collingwood Football Club next play finals under your guidance?
Come on, Jared.
That's a hypothetical.
Well, it's a hypothetical question, and I'll give you a hypothetical answer as soon as possible.
Thanks, Jeff.
Good luck, Jeff. Appreciate your time. Thanks.
Jeff Brown on Sports Day.
Okay.
Yes, it was an amazing start by Australia. At one stage, we were 3 for 11. Anybody with an English persuasion would have been hiding under the bed at that stage. Monty Panesar, former England test spinner, joins us. Hopefully, he's emerged from under the bed. Welcome to you, Monty.
Well, good morning from England. I guess you guys must be absolutely delighted with today's performance from Australia.
Monty, we're only taking it one session at a time, and until we're 3 for 270 at stumps probably tomorrow night, and we've seen off the new ball, I think that's when we should start gloating. As you know, us Australians, we're very very quiet and self-restrained unit as a country.
Yeah, you know, I must say it's far the opposite. But it must be great, you know, great for the Australian fans, and also especially, you know, since some of the states have been in such, you know, extreme lockdown, this must be just great news just to see the Australian team do so well on the first day, and especially getting that first wicket.
Yeah, it was
you
amazing.
Know, the first ball. You couldn't ask for a better start.
Monty, I know, I mean, we're all having a laugh now. We won't know what this score is like until we bat. Yeah. But was there surprise in England that Joe Root batted?
I thought it was a bit of a surprise because, I was with a Barmy Army fan and we saw the toss go up and I thought, oh, yeah, everyone's got, he's going to have a bowl. And then he batted, which was slightly surprising. And then also with the selection, you know, we just thought with so much rain around and, you know, there's a bit of juice in that wicket that possibly, you know, Joe Root could have bowled a bit of spin, and you know Stuart Broad, he's got a fantastic record.
Yep.
At the Gabba, where he's actually, I think he's taken 12 wickets at an average of, you know, 24. So that's surprising again. And again, you know, we'll have to see, you know, how England bowl under the sort of overcast conditions. There's a lot of rain around, so who knows? You know, will there be enough time, you know, to enforce a result by both teams? We just don't know. So, but it's been a fantastic day for Australia. You know, a dream start for Pat Cummings. He could not ask for a better start to be the Australian captain.
No, I'm not sure what went wrong. I think the only thing that's gone wrong at this stage is that Nathan Lyon hasn't got his 400. I don't think he got his 400th wicket, but the captain got 5 for.
Yeah.
We fielded Stark bowled really well. Stark got the monkey off the back, and it really started that selection, as you said. Broad not selected. I saw Warner doing backflips when he wasn't selected.
So first time an England team has played without Broad and Anderson since 2006. So, I mean, that's what are they going to need to do with the ball? Who are they turning to tomorrow, Monty, do you think?
Well, look, you've got to watch how Australia, the Australians bowled, you know, relentless on that off-stump line and then, you know, sort of bowling just back of a length where you're just kind of leaving that ball, leaving it, and then they bowl it slightly fuller and then they get the sort of, you know, the nick. And I think that's what England need to do as well. You know, Ollie Robinson, there'll be a lot of obviously pressure on him, but he's a high-arm bowler, you know, really probably got the highest sort of release point. That'll be really interesting to see how the Australian batsmen combat that. You may get that bit of extra bounce. Chris Wokes probably be a bit more similar to sort of Jimmy Anderson's style. So, you know, these two are going to be key bowlers, I think, for England tomorrow. And Jack Leach, you know, let's see how he goes. He may not even get a bowl, you know. We may not even see him, you know, have too much bowling to be done with the way the surface is playing. And especially, you know, like you said, you know, there's a bit of cloud cover, a bit of sort of heavy rain. So it's going to be a big day. But I think the real, you know, I think, what, Saturday is kind of the fourth day or, you know, of the test match where the weather is actually at its best. That could be a deciding factor if... If England are batting, you know, on that day, they need to have a really good day. That's going to be the day where they have to show that, you know, we can compete against this Australian side. And And at the moment, I must say, Pat Cummins 1, Joe Root 0.
Yeah, it's been a big win for the skipper and a big win for Australia when, even if it does peter out to be a rain-affected draw, I think the galvanising of the team from, say, 3 months ago pre the World Cup victory, and this is obviously a different side, but after today, I think that it's going to be a much more solid unit and much more difficult to win.
Yeah, look, this Australian side, I think as a bowling unit, I think they're much stronger than a batting unit. They're always going to be testing on their batting, and a huge reliance is going to be on Steve Smith. David Warner has had a successful T20 run, but we don't know how he's going to adapt against, you know, the Kookaburra ball, and it depends on the England bowlers as well, you know, the discipline that they bowl, and do they get that same movement as well. So it's Australian batting is going to be the key, you know. Whenever they bowl, say, England out cheaply, how do they respond back? That's going to be really, you know, interesting to see, and especially the huge reliance, you know. Last time when they had the Ashes down under, I think Steve Smith was unbelievable. I think he's averaging over 100, and he had a great sort of Ashes series then, and that's going to be a deciding factor as well, how he plays. And because, you know, some of the younger players, you know, they very sort of come hard at the ball, you know, real dash at it. That could play into the England bowlers. So it'll be fascinating to see, you know, how they cope against when the ball just moves a little bit.
Monty, great to have you on. Try to enjoy the rest of the day. We'll chat to you after you lose the first test.
Thanks, Ray. Thanks.
Monty Panesar, maybe a little bit harsh at the end there. Great friend of this show and a little bit flat, as you can imagine. Hey, I've just had a look. The Department of Health, the Australian government. So the Australian Technical Advisory Group on Immunisation has essentially given the list as of November 26th of who can get the exemption.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty clear. So unless you have an inflammatory cardiac illness without the last 3 months, a major medical condition, like you've just had major surgery, a confirmed PCR of the SARS-CoV-2 infection, which you'd expect Novak hasn't had, any serious adverse attributed to the previous dose of a vaccine. Now, we think he's unvaccinated, so that wouldn't apply. And if the vaccine is a risk to themselves or others during the process that would warrant a temporary exemption. Now, that's a little bit vague. And then it says that chronic symptoms following COVID-19, not a contraindication of COVID-19 vaccines, but do warrant clinical discussion. And then it talks about pregnancy.
But given that he's playing tennis, he hasn't got any contraindications there. So
of that list, and it does say at the top, vaccines have been demonstrated to be safe and effective and recommended for all Australians over the age of 12. There are very few situations where a vaccine is contraindicated, and as such, medical exemptions are expected to be very rarely acquired.
Yeah, I think, as I said at the top, any medical exemption, I think, would create more problems than it solves for Novak.
More sports after this. Welcome back to Sports Day. Let's get to the calls. Lee's in Doncaster. Hello, Lee.
Oh, hi. I love your show. I listen all the time. First time radio.
Thanks, Lee.
And I'm thinking about we should let Djokovic come because he's very smart sportsman. He not just have the muscles, he have the brain. And also, Scott Morrison say we not Australia not mandates, like not pushing people. You know, if you don't want to get jabbed, you don't have to. But why we not now turning to communist country? You know, even where this Djokovic come from, he's I believe he come from Yugoslavia. Yeah.
Yep, he's Serbian. I mean,
so it's like a communist country, but even now, communist country not so hard on people like Australia. We feel like coming to, communist country now.
Trouble is, Lee, everybody else in Victoria, if they want to be essential workers, have to be vaccinated. And the Premier has said that there's not different rules for tennis players.
Thanks, Lee. Appreciate your call. Keep calling in. Tony's in Greenvale. G'day, Tone.
Hey, fellas. How are you?
Good.
I've probably come a little bit different angle. My son's got a medical exemption because he's got a blood disorder.
Yep.
And he took his paperwork to work last week, and they said, oh, hang on, what's all this? No, you look fit and healthy. We're going to check with your doctor, and we're going to look in your medical reports, and you take two extended. They stood him down for 2 weeks.
Yep.
While they did all this. And then the union found out about it, and they came in and they gave him hell. They said, you cannot You cannot look at someone's medical reports. You can't ask to talk to their doctor. You have no rights to do anything like that. It's a legal certificate, and they have to abide by it. So now he's still got his 2 weeks off, but it's with full pay. And while they investigate with the union, because they're not allowed to ask. So we really, at the end of the day, if Djokovic has got a legal document, we can't turn around and say no to it.
Yep, Tony, there are certain situations. I'd be surprised if Novak is the same, though. We're going to find out pretty soon.
It's time for a country racing update. The country is back racing strong again. Support local communities and visit countryracing.com.
Maggie Payne is our resident expert from Country Racing Victoria. The Country Cups are on hold for a few weeks with Christmas parties in full swing. Maggie, what is coming up though?
Yeah, we don't race any Country Cups until Boxing Day, but there's plenty to look forward to. We've got lots of Christmas party race days with Friday night at Cranbourne and the doubleheader with Moonee Valley night races. So if you're at a Christmas party on Friday night, there'll be a race every 10 minutes. Saturday we head to Wangaratta and the picnics out at Hillsville, which will be beautiful. And Sunday we finish off with a big Christmas meeting at Bendigo.
What's your go-to drink at the Christmas parties, Maggie? You'd be off the French champagne after Macron threw us under the bus, surely.
No, I'm an old school girl. I like a good beer when I can, when I'm not working.
What's your favourite beer?
In the summer.
We've got some no alcohol urban myth to give to you if you give us the right answer. What's your favourite beer?
Well, Carlton Dry, actually.
Okay, well, that's fine. You can wash it down with some urban myth.
Carlton Dry. Okay. That is not the beer I pictured for Maggie.
It's an old-fashioned beer.
It's a very old-fashioned beer.
For a young girl, Maggie, that's an old-fashioned beer.
Well, like I said, I'm easily pleased. And if I'm in the summer, start at the races, I'm happy.
All of these meetings got plenty on. Live music, activities for the kids, and the potential, well, obviously, the great country hospitality. What's your favourite event?
Oh, we've been through this, Jared. I don't have a favourite. They're all my favourites. If you can get to any this weekend, get to the Hillsville Picnics. It's a ripper meeting, and I know Sam's heading in January, so get along to the Hillsville Picnics.
Okay.
Thanks, Maggie. Maggie Payne from Country Racing Victoria. She's doing a great job, and country racing absolutely thriving in the great state of Victoria. Hey, before we go, so I'm not sure if Novak's playing, but one of the other greatest tennis players that the world has ever seen, Serena Williams, who's currently the world number 41, she's not in. She's withdrawn following advice from her medical team. So she told late night host in the US, Jared, Jimmy Kimmel, this on November 5.
Think you will be ready for the Australian Open in January?
Yeah, I'm definitely, yeah. Okay.
Definitely, yeah. And the quote today, while this is never definitely an easy decision, I am nowhere near where I need to be physically to compete. Melbourne's one of my favourite cities to visit, and I look forward to playing at the AO every year. I'll miss seeing the fans, but I'm excited to return and compete at my highest level.
Interesting. Wonder if she's got similar views to Novak on vaccination.
I don't know. She hasn't been public about it. If she has, I don't think.
So no other tennis tournament in the world forces you to be vaccinated.
Speaking of Novak, Stan's in Melbourne. G'day, Dan.
Evening, boys. Just hypothetically speaking, if the Australian Open was held in Sydney,
yep,
would all this talk about Novak or even Serena be an issue?
No, it wouldn't be. I think that they were more liberal in their views on the vaccination for tennis tournaments because there was a pushback between the Prime Minister and Dan Andrews at the time.
It's become even more liberal now with Dominic Perrottet, or as Andrew Westacott calls him, Dom Perignon.
Dom Perignon, yep.
Sorry, go on, Dan.
I was just going to say, does that sort of give you an indication of where Melbourne sits with big events? You know, if this is going to be the level of scrutiny that the sports that come to Melbourne are put under, does the Sydney become a more attractive option?
I think that's always going to play a role in it. But look, I don't think this will go on forever, but it's certainly in place. And I think that there wouldn't be one Melbournean who would believe that Novak Djokovic should walk in here with a medical exemption. Pushback, I think, will be savage.
Good on you, Dan. Take a slab of urban myth. It's the beautiful alcohol-free beer from Urban Alley. It's outstanding. So on that, give me your thoughts, Jared. If Novak plays, like all said and done, he's playing, which I hope he loses.
Oh, look, I'm No, I wouldn't hope he loses.
Sorry, let me rephrase that. Would you barrack for him to win number 21?
I'd be really disappointed at how cynical the whole thing is. Yeah. I mean, I might turn off mentally turn off the program itself, and I think
the tournament.
That's the risk.
I
think a lot of people were anti the tournament even going ahead last year at the height of the pandemic.
Yeah, we took a lot of calls on this. Yeah,
and I just think this is why it's such a dangerous scenario. I mean, it's a lose lose for Novak. I mean, clearly he can win it, but he's going to win another title somewhere. I think he's better off winning where there's no controversy. I hope for Tennis Australia and Novak that he turns up vaccinated. I hope he doesn't try and come through.
I can't see that
happening. With a dubious medical certificate.
What odds you give him playing? I couldn't call it. I still think he's 60-40 not to play.
I reckon he's about 80% certain to play.
Okay, well, we'll review those odds in a couple of weeks' time when we know more. What a big night on Sports Day. We might need an urban myth to debrief on that.
We might need an urban nail.
See you tomorrow.